time to tell the neighbors the Charlie Evers Show is on. It's time that you can listen to eras long bygone. So email all your loved ones or call them on your phone and tell them Charlie Evers is on. It may be terminal wrinkles, it may be Hillary's hair, it may be on top of the courthouse, you bet old Charlie's there. You may be invited to dinner, but tell them you can't come. The Charlie Evers is home.
Okay, yes, and big good morning to all of you. It's a beautiful day, and it's going to be quite warm today. Warm and humid. We may even get a shower out of it. Well, today is a special day. Just prior to our big wheels, wings and wheels program at the airport, which will be this Saturday, Friday night will be our big reception. And to talk about all this, well, the biggest thing maybe coming would be the Red Tails. The big trailer. Well, Terry Hollis is the go-getter for the person that manages that, and his wife Jeanette is here too. But Terry, now tell us the Red Tails Squadron. First of all, what was the Red Tails Squadron?
Well, the Red Tail Squadron was the first black pilots of World War II, of course, and they got their claim to fame of being the best bomber escorters there was out there. I mean, back in the day, we're talking way back in the time when blacks couldn't, they weren't supposed to drink out of the same water fountain, they couldn't eat in the same restaurants and that sort of stuff. But these guys became fighter escort pilots. They were treated at in such a way. And at that time, that they weren't even supposed to be able to fly airplanes. They were supposed to be too dumb, too ignorant. But these guys, they proved everybody wrong, and they were some of the best fighter escorters out there. People requested them. That was it.
Isn't that something? Now, did they lose any planes?
Well, the history books now, see, you have a lot of people say they lost no bombers. Well, the history book actually shows that they lost 24 and a half bombers.
Oh, really?
Now, I had to ask one of the guys one day, how do you lose half a bomber? He said, that's when the plane is shot up so bad they really don't know if it made it back or not. But still, if you take in consideration we were losing 8 out of 10 of every one of our bombers going over, and all of a sudden it comes to near zero, that's quite an outstanding feat.
Okay, now the Red Tail Squadron, you used, was it Grumman, or not Grumman, but the
P-51?
P-51, yeah.
Yes.
That was their sole plane.
Well, they started, of course, like everybody else, they learned how to fly in the Stearman, and they went to the, they became, later on, they flew the P-38s, they flew the P-51s.
P-38, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they had to work their way up too, but what gave them the true claim to fame was the P-51, for the sole reason, the fact that it could go to Germany and back, and that was quite the feat again. So.
Now, they with their P-51s, did they lose many?
They didn't lose too many. I don't have my stats right here in front of me, but I think we lost a few of our aircraft, but not that many, no.
But now, your trailer that you bring, does it highlight all from the beginning on through?
Well, what the trailer actually does, and it folds out, it becomes a mobile theater. Okay, we're spread out both sides. We get 35 to 40 people at a time in there. It's a 39.5-foot curved screen, similar to an IMAX. The airplane itself has a 38-foot wingspan, so when they do the flight scene, you can see wingtip to wingtip, just like you're in the airplane.
No kidding.
Exactly.
Wow.
It's quite fantastic. But it's a 30-minute program. Lets everybody kind of know who they were, what they did, a little bit of their history background, and what the CAF is doing to keep the story alive. Because that's one thing that we just can't let part of our history die. There's just some things just not in history books anymore. And we do a lot of school visits with this thing, and when you go to schools, we try to get kids through their third grade through the eighth grade. Of course, all kids can see it, but we figure that's a target audience, because it seems to be when the kids get above eighth grade, they think they know it all anyway. So
isn't that the truth? But it's so important, like you say, in educating our youth, because in this day and age, too, we notice the black people. Are talking about, being held, even today being held back, but yet people need to know that they came forward after so much discrimination in World War II, and even while they were flying, there was discrimination everywhere.
Oh yeah, yeah. They had a mission to prove two things, actually. The fact that, number one, we can do it, and we can do it well, and we will continue. We can do whatever we want to do.
Yeah.
Colonel Charles McGee, he says himself, one of the things that only you can prevent yourself from doing what you want to do in life.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's a really strong statement, we try to teach all the kids this is something that if you don't make it, we have so many that think they're going to make it in the professional world of athletes. They think they're going to make it in the professional musicians and thing. Have a backup plan, because if you don't make that, have a backup plan.
Yes, yes.
Even professional athletes, when they go to play professional football or whatever, most of these guys have got a background they can fall back on, because they know it's not if they get hurt, it's when they get hurt.
Well, that's right. It is bound to happen one time or another.
Oh, yeah.
Boy.
Yeah.
But this is so great that people need to see the what great tasks that the black population as pilots did in World War II. My, it
yeah.
needs to be amplified.
It really does, because, like I say, they did something at a time when, like I say, everybody said they couldn't do it, they was incapable of doing it, and they proved everybody that they were definitely wrong. They could do it, and you see the Hollywood versions, which, Hollywood is out there for entertainment purposes, and what we have at our exhibit, it's a documentary program. It's designed especially for that traveling exhibit. You won't see it anywhere else. We have people all the time, oh, yeah, I seen that at home. I said, well, how'd you see it at home?
And
they've got the Hollywood version or something, and what we've got is a real deal. We've been running this program for 9.5 years now, heading toward 10 strong, and it's quite amazing that even today we still have people go through the exhibit, and the number one comment they make out the door is, that's a very well-put-together program.
That's good. Now, how did you get involved with this?
Well, it's kind of a long story in itself, but back several years ago, there was a gentleman that contacted us, complete stranger to us. He was looking for a husband-wife team to pull an exhibit trailer for the Negro League Baseball.
Oh.
And I had to be honest with him. I told him, I said, at my age, I hate to say this, but I'd never even heard of the Negro League Baseball. It's just one of the things in history that I didn't get taught. And once we had a little conversation with each other, next thing you know, we hooked up with him. We started pulling that exhibit for 5 years, and then they came along with this program. And I said, this I know about. I said, I'll be happy to do this.
Sounds like you spent much of your life on the road.
Oh yes, I've been in the trucking industry for ever since back in the early 70s. So I'm getting to that age. I'm getting about ready to get out of it.
Well, that's the big thing now. Look at the trucking companies are begging for drivers.
Oh, yeah.
Offering incentives of all kinds.
Oh yeah, they're out there, but ours is kind of a specialized deal. I spent a great deal of time in the household moving industry. We used to move people all over the country for different carriers, and you've got to be able to deal with the public, because what we do you just sometimes you may have to bite your tongue.
Yeah.
But this is life, you know. You just go on and be honest with folks. I mean, folks, if there's most on the most, they appreciate honesty and just tell it like it is.
Now, we have a very large population of mostly called African Americans, but you know, I that's a title that it's, well, we didn't call them African Americans at one other time. And how did that come about, I wonder?
Well, you know, there again, it's you know, they've been called blacks, they've been called other words, you know, they've been different things. But, you know, you have to look, we look at it like this, you know, you're either African or you're American. There is no difference to us. You know, you're just American, you know. If born in America, raised in America, whatever, if you come from another country, whatever, you know, you're American. It was just, like I say, back in the days of slavery and things like that, that was an ugly time in life.
It's part of
something that, you know, everybody wished that they could forget, but guess what? It's history. You must learn from it. You got to move on.
It is, absolute. And we're not being, the young people are not being taught history very well, if at all, in school.
Well, that's very true. Like I say, we do, we have been to so many schools with this thing, it's very disheartening to see our public education has gone the direction which it has, of trying to eliminate so much of the history. You know, I can't really get a grip on it, because, you know, things worked out great for my generation. They have progressively gotten better. I know the technology has gotten absolutely fantastic, and that's great, wonderful. But you still need to know what happened way back when, so let's don't repeat such stupid things, you know?
Absolutely. And I find, too, that being on the air, and I know a lot of history, especially local history, and it is totally unknown to the current generation. That's why on the internet now, you know you're from Marion, you know you're from Bucyrus or whatever, and then people put pictures and different things on it of the past.
Right.
And people love, in that case, bringing up the past or finding out more about it. And when I look at that, I lived through all that.
Yeah.
I'm old enough. And World War II. We had an army camp in Bucyrus, just north of here, Camp Millard it was called. And they were there until after the war, and then it turned back into the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
But they used to come marching by our house, and I can remember them yelling at me, "Fall in, kid."
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many things, even in my lifetime, you know, I'm younger than you are, but even so, I mean, I can remember before the interstate highway system was complete, you had certain places you had to go here and you had to go there to go around this, and certain towns you had to go through because the bypass wasn't completed yet. And, you know, there's been a tremendous amount of changes, and now our highway system in some places is completely deteriorating. Well, you got to get it fixed. You know, you got to go.
And who was it? General Eisenhower.
Yeah.
When he took office, he started the interstate movement, and boy, what a great thing that turned out to be.
Exactly. Where this country would have been without it.
Oh, my guess. Wow. But I grew up in Bucyrus, and that was on Interstate 30. And now, of course, there's a 30 bypass. You couldn't, that amount of traffic, you could never run through a main section of town. Just car after car and truck after truck. How everything increases over the years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wow. You know, you can go out to L.A., you know, you may have seven lanes of traffic going in one direction, you know, or something, you know, and they're all crown packed full.
Yeah, isn't that something? So now your truck is how long?
Well, we're 81 feet long overall.
81?
Yeah, and of course, when we're set up with the exhibit, we're 35 feet wide, and people figure, well, how do you get that out of an 8-foot wide trailer? Well, you know, it spreads out 8 foot on each side, which gives you a total of 24 feet. Then you have a 4-foot platform for people coming out the doors and a 7-foot staircase. So,
wow.
But, you know, when we actually get set up, it's just like we set a building into the parking lot. It takes us about 3 hours. My wife and I, we get it set up about 3 hours. And then we're ready to run a program.
After you leave here today, Are you going to complete your setup?
Oh, yeah. The setup is 99% done. All we've got to do is put up a little tent outside and a little registration kiosk. That it doesn't cost anybody. It's a free event. What we do there is we just ask that people sign in. That way it gives us a head count, because we just sign in one member of the family. If you have a mother and she's got three kids, you know, then you got a group of four. You know, you can keep track of how many people go through the exhibit.
Very important, yes.
It's important to us, because we know that if we don't do this, if you're not getting enough people through there, you have to ask yourself, what are we doing?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
you got to be going somewhere where you get enough people through there to see the exhibit, to understand, keep the story and keep it alive, and that's it.
Now, is there anything that you can pass out as souvenirs of any kind?
Well, we've just got brochures and things of that nature, but we do have for sale hats and T-shirts, things like that help keep the exhibit on the road, because, like I say, it's a nonprofit organization, and you don't make a lot of money. It's just a matter of just keeping it on the road
and
being able to. Like I say, our normal work week is, like, Monday's usually a drive day. Tuesday you're setting up somewhere, you know, whether it be in an aviation museum or a school. And then you'll have a school visit Wednesday, Thursday, tear down Thursday night, move over to your local airport for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then start it all over again.
Okay. So, now, Terry, is this one of the only locations? Maybe you have a pilot from the... Harold Brown is his name?
Well, Harold Brown, he lives up in the Port Clinton area.
Yes.
And he is going to be down here, as we understand, if all goes well, if his health holds up, he'll be down here with us hopefully for Saturday.
And yeah, won't that be something?
Oh, listen, Harold and I, we're good friends. We see Harold all over the country. I mean, because this is one of the treasures and treats that we get out of pulling this exhibit. We know most of all the airmen that are still alive today. We know where they live. We know their families. We spent a great deal of time with them. And that's a treat that most people will never get to even have a privilege of even meeting these guys. And, of course, Harold, he got shot down, had to spend some time in the prison camps and stuff. And
that's going to be an interesting story to hear then.
Oh, yeah. He's an interesting guy. I mean, he's had a wonderful life and a wonderful person. That's just all there is to it.
How old is Harold?
He's, I think he's 95 now.
No
Don't
kidding.
Hold me to it. He's in 94, 95, one of the two.
Wow. Now, we're going to break here in about 40 seconds for about a minute or so. Then we'll be right back with Terry Hollis. And now, if you have any questions, listeners, you know our number, 740-383-9944. If you'd like to ask Terry anything at all about the exhibit that's in Marion now, please feel free. Are you going to be open? Let's see, the reception is Friday. Are you going to be open tomorrow?
We'll be open tomorrow, yeah, from, let's see what my hours. You know what the hours were, Janine?
Ted, did you know President Harding's
dog,
Laddie Boy, had a gold collar?
That's not so unusual.
Really?
No, he had a golden collar. I have a golden voice. Tomato, tomato.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
/180/111, and I had a stroke.
I couldn't speak. I'd walk.
150/90, and I had a stroke.
This is what high blood pressure sounds like. You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a stroke are far from silent. Get back on your treatment plan or talk with your doctor to create a plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe, everything's changed.
Brought to you by the American Stroke Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back, and Terry Klein is on the phone right now. Terry, go ahead.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to give him some information. Number one, his wife called me, and hopefully we've got a sign up there that this morning has been canceled. But from 3:30 to 7:30 today, the exhibit will be open to the public. And then again tomorrow, 9 to 1 and 3:30 to 7:30. It'll be closed Friday to set up for the fly-in, and then Saturday morning from 9 to 6 p.m.
Okay, so plenty of opportunity for the people around here and beyond to see the exhibit.
Right. And Friday, juniors and seniors at all the high schools in Marion County will have the unique privilege to see and hear Dr. Harold Brown and see his 15-minute documentary. Also, they're supposed to be showing the 15-minute documentary, not the 30-minute one, because we would have lines so backed up. I'm sure we'll probably, hopefully we'll have lines backed up, but a 15-minute wait or so, you know, isn't as bad as waiting 30 minutes and people, you know, they'll only wait an hour or two when it's to go on a roller coaster. You know, for intellectual enlightenment, I think they have a short fuse. So hopefully they'll all be patient and understanding and get a real taste of, you know, I think Harold Brown and these Tuskegee men, they are true American heroes.
Absolutely. I noticed today, too, the big banner across the Mount Vernon Avenue.
Yep, somebody's oversight. It's not 8:30. It's 9 o'clock to 6 o'clock Saturday.
Okay.
And are you out of commercial?
No, I'm we're free right now.
Oh, you're on the air right now. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I thought you were in commercial. Okay. Also, you know, there are some tickets left for the VIP reception Friday. And there is going to be some great food. Charlie, you've seen the menu and everything for the hors d'oeuvres, and people will get the opportunity to go through this trailer and experience the Tuskegee Airmen and also see this P-51 aircraft is just incredible. And there'll be the Black Hawk medevac helicopter and a lot of things that will be going on, along with Dr. Harold Brown's personal documentary Inside the Hangar. And then too, the big draw is some ticket holder is going to get a flight in that P-51. Hopefully the weather will hold out and they can do that Friday. If not, we'll just fall back and do it on Saturday sometime.
Very good.
But I haven't had the opportunity to talk with Terry. I talked with his wife. Hey, it's great to have you folks here, and I'm sure we'll be running into each other, certainly Friday at the VIP reception.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay.
Thank you.
Interesting. Okay, so it's a big event coming here at the airport. I just hope we have thousands and thousands of people show up.
Well, that would be wonderful. You know, of course, the only downside to our exhibit is you can only get 35 to 40 people in.
At a time,
as he mentioned, you know, then that we do have the 15-minute program. Of course, when we do schools and things of that nature, that's where we do the 30-minute show. So if we kind of do whichever way it happens to be. If you've got a small turnout, then you use a 30-minute show. If you've got a big turnout, you use a 15-minute, and that works great.
Yeah. Now, is Harold Brown going to be in the trailer or around? Or
no, he'll be around or the outside or somewhere for the sole reason. Like I say, it's just like get people in, get them out as quick as possible because there's so many things to do. I mean, because the aircraft itself will be there. We've got six different pilots that flies the airplane, and so as he says, somebody there is going to be a lucky individual that'll get a ride. But Harold's going to be there, whether he's in the hangar, whether he's out with us, he will be there milling around with people.
That's good.
He loves.
Harold must have a great personality.
Oh, he does. He's fantastic.
Great. Well, I saw the plane come in from St. Louis the other Sunday, and so impressive. And the first thing you notice is that huge propeller, and that's how they got their speed, along with the engine, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now, of course, the pilot. Tell us about the pilot.
Yeah, well, the pilot that brought it in from St. Louis, his dad was a Tuskegee Airman.
Really?
So, yeah. We've got, I think, three of our guys that flies the airplane. They're actually airline pilots. And, of course, Brad Lang, he's the one that brought it in. And he's an airline pilot for Delta Airlines.
Oh, no kidding?
Yeah, lives in Los Angeles, and he flies all over the country. But every once in a while, we get a weekend of the month. He's going to be with us next weekend in Colorado Springs. But his job this time was just bring the plane over from St. Louis to here. Then we've got a local pilot that lives up in the Cleveland area who will be piloting the plane this weekend. And like I say, our pilots are scattered all over the country because we're a nonprofit organization. We have guys that they're just whoever's in their backyard, so to speak, they'll come out and fly the airplane.
Well, isn't
folks.
That good? Yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Well, what an impressive airplane, too. A lot of people, of course, have never seen a World War II aircraft. And just the sight of this and to hear it and to see it fly gives you a good idea of what went on.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, especially when you tell everybody, look, it's a, you know, whether it be a 42 or 43 model or 44, whichever airplane happens to be there, you know, you tell them that, and it's like, wow, that's really old.
It's amazing, isn't it? Now, the P-51, of course, is quite old, naturally, but maintenance is a big thing with those.
Oh, yes. We have an annual maintenance program, and, of course, a monthly. They're on top of it, I mean, because they're very delicate. You know, when you think about them, I mean, going through back in the days, they used to replace engines quite regularly at 200 or 300 hours.
Yeah.
And of course, now, day and time, you know, we get thousands of hours. But the point being is they don't get there by accident. It gets there because of very rigorous maintenance.
I can imagine. Now, did the plane after it landed here Sunday night, has it undergone inspection and maintenance?
No. He just parked the airplane in the hangar, and of course the next guy when he comes along to get it, that's his number one thing, go check it all out.
No kidding.
These guys do a real good job before they get in the airplane checking it out. If there's something not right, they're not going to fly the airplane until it gets right.
Any other of the pilots, son of Tuskegee Airmen?
No, we just have just the one. Just the one. You have to think about it. And I asked this question of Brad one day. I asked him, I said, today, from the 1940s to today, when you had, you know, no black pilots, I said, what of a ratio of black pilots? He said, today it's less than 1%.
Really?
And he said, that's really a shame when you think about, you know, the opportunities laid before them. He once pulled into Atlanta to the terminal down there, and one of the ground crew come up to him. He said, you know, he wanted to shake his hand. He said, you know, for him being a black pilot, he said, you know, the only difference between being up here and being down there is education. He said, you need to understand that. He said, just get you an education. He said, you can do anything you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, believe that, you know. Yeah. Boy, and when you see all the black people today of high esteem and technology and everything else, it's kind of like even Steven.
Yeah. You know, I mean, look at look at Ben Carson, you know, up in D.C. here. I mean, this guy's a genius. And, you know, we should have had him for president, you know, back in the day. I mean, because when he ran, it's like he would have got my vote because, I mean, he's sharp, you know. I mean,
he was. And very technically oriented, to say the least.
Oh, yeah.
And could probably see a solution to problems that others couldn't.
Exactly. You know, I mean, he said they might have been I can't remember exactly how he worded it about the brain surgery. He said there's a bunch of them up there missing some brain parts.
Oh, boy, yeah. So, how long did you say your trailer is?
Well, it's 53 feet is what the trailer is. That's the overall length of it. Of course, the width of it right now, like I say, we're 34 feet wide with the complete setup.
Right.
Now, and of course, inside we've got bleacher style seating. We can set approximately 20 people on each row, each set of bleachers.
Wow.
We get, say, 5 people to the row. And the biggest thing is the big wraparound screen, because you can see the airplane, go inside and see the program. And even to this day, we will have people that will actually see the plane, see the program, and then come right there and say, is that the same airplane I just saw fly? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely.
Isn't that something? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And at the reception Friday evening, the plane will be in the same room with us.
Well, I don't know exactly how that's going to be. It probably is. I mean, because I know they make it habit, usually they'll have a big reception. They'll put the plane in there. It might be on a red carpet or whatever, you know, because it's a great centerpiece, you know, because it's rare.
It sure was a thrill to see that plane land, my land, and to come streaking through the sky. I hope that it woke up a few people in Marion, because it covered part of the town.
Yeah, our pilots usually they'll come in and I'm going to hope that the weather is permissible, because usually they'll come in and like to fly it around a little bit, give kind of buzz to the community a little bit, and let people look up. They'll hear something
That's
different.
Right.
Look up, Well, what is that? Where's that plane at? Where's it going? You know, they want to find out. Some people say, I heard that thing, and I knew I had to come to the airport and see if it was coming here.
That's a big thing, because some people might, despite everything, might not be aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
But, boy, that plane, buzzing, Marion. We used to do that years ago when we had the Murphy fly-in, Mideast Regional fly-in, and we had those little homemade planes flying all around Marion.
Yeah.
And it brought a lot of people out to the airport.
Yeah. It's what they call it, buzz the community and kind of get them stirred up and get them waking up. You know, of course, some people just don't look up. What can we say? But, you know, we would like for them to encourage them to do so, you know.
The tunnel vision.
There you go.
You see nothing other than straight ahead. But, oh, this is going to be great. And there's so many servicemen. There's a few from World War II that will be out there that will enjoy the whole presentation. But a lot of younger people become acquainted for the first time.
It would be it's really what we're trying to get is young people involved in aviation. It doesn't have they don't really have to be in aviation. Just get out and do something
that's interesting
for yourself, you know. But the aviation world is wide open. I mean the airlines are just like the trucking industry. They're always looking for more pilots,
right.
We know of a few people ourselves that since we've been pulling this exhibit, we know of a few young people that have got involved with aviation and are doing quite well for themselves.
Really?
And it makes us proud to know that we know somebody that has gotten something out of the message we're trying to teach.
Well, that's great. Absolutely. Yeah, to instill excitement in the young people, that's what it takes. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
And we're about to the end of our setup. Now, when you leave here, you'll go back to the airport, and what do you have to do yet today?
Well, we've just got to pop up what we call a pop-up tent. It's a 10 by 15 tent. Well, like I say, we'll put it up and get our little registration kiosk set up there again for people to come in and sign in.
Yeah.
Well, that way it keeps us account, and we give them a little sticker. It's got their name tag on it, and that more or less just like when the lines start to form, we can count so many people out of this group that we know we're going to get in for this show. There's a clock over the door. There's a countdown clock.
Wow. And we have a caller. Yeah, caller, go ahead.
Hey, one added thing. It's a reception that Terry and his wife will be going to as our guest. We are working on getting a table for World War II veterans to sit with Harold Brown. And, for the folks listening, come out to the reception. You will get to meet Tom Brokaw that said the greatest generation.
Yeah, we're about to break time, Terry.
Yep, that's why I wanted to give a little quick plug for that.
Very good.
Thank
you.
Bye.
Okay, so you'll be leaving here shortly, and boy, we'll enjoy being out there. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's nice and peaceful and quiet. Of course, you know, the wings and wheels.
Scott, we hear so much about Bernie Sanders being a socialist. But actually, one of the first big socialists to run for president came from right here in Marion, Ohio.
Oh, yes, Norman Thomas.
Yes, and did you know Norman Thomas also sold ice cream?
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, he was the first ice cream socialist.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back once again here at WWGH 107.1, and we should be hearing from John Shuttleworth. He's going to be calling in. He's up in Findlay. I hope John calls. 10:47 right now. And I hope you enjoyed hearing Terry Hollis. His wife Jeanette was with him, and they're the ones that bring the unit, assemble it, and drive it, and take good care of it. So I hope all of you listening will be out there. You know, it costs nothing to go to this, absolutely nothing. And, you can buy some food when you're there, or they have some souvenirs of the Tuskegee Airmen that you could buy, and hats and different things. That's great. A super weekend coming up. Wow. Okay, it's kind of a warm day today, isn't it? To say the least. Okay, and big event, and tickets have been sold for the big reception, which will take place on Friday evening prior to the Saturday, the big show. So, and at that reception, of course, we'll have some of the greatest food you could ever have, and as well as we'll be seated around the P-51 Mustang. And boy, that is a plane. Woo! And it was piloted to here from St. Louis by the son of one of the Tuskegee Airmen. I thought that was... I wondered, first of all, if there was a black pilot piloting that plane, and sure enough, and then to be the son of a Tuskegee Airman, that's even greater. And he must really enjoy what he does. And of course, like Terry said, they have a group of pilots that can fly that plane, and really great. So it's for those of us that like aviation of all kinds, and I've flown in everything that goes off the ground, including those flying girders. Remember, you haven't seen any of those in a long time, where it was just a tubular framework with a seat on it and a wing and a small motor. I flew in a few of those, and that's a thrill, because when you're up in the air, you're on a little like bicycle seat, and it's down all the way around you, down and something. So aviation is exciting, and I hope that we instill that excitement in a lot of people here this weekend once again, because it takes a lot of work to put together these programs like we're going to have at the airport. Indeed, it takes a whole year's work. Now, we had a problem develop. When you're dealing with the government, sometimes everything doesn't go like, with a private organization. And so we had two Osprey aircraft that were due to fly in here, courtesy of the government, but something happened, and they had to cancel them out. And I can't tell you exactly what went on, but it was involved with the government. And like I say, it's better to deal privately with the organizations rather than try to do something with the government, because last year we promoted this big truck that was supposed to be at the airport. It was an Army truck and had a little bit of everything on it. And one of the government people sequestered or took that truck, went to a ball game with it at the time that was supposed to be at our airport. So those things you have to deal with. And anyhow, so Terry Hollis and his wife Jeanette were here, and you'll see them out at the airport, of course. All right, and we should, John Shuttleworth was supposed to call in here. He's up in Findlay. And let me see, what else do we have here? We could have Dale Bauer, the helicopter pilot, 1145. So we'll see. And tomorrow we'll have the man who owns the Sharktado food truck at 10:15. Sharktado. And just to hear or see his menu of things he'll have. We have, I don't know how many food trucks coming, but quite a few. So food will be no problem. It'd be quite available, food, ice cream, whatever. And it's going to be a big weekend. Hope you can be there. 10:51's the time. Now, since I have no call-in right now, let me see what I can go back and resurrect here in the way of questions. I do have, for a giveaway, I've got tickets to the Columbus Zoo and the Wilds, and tickets for an oil change at Bill Huntsman's of regular oil. Okay, so what can I ask you today? Let me see. I think I asked one. What year did the tornado hit Carlington? What year did the tornado hit Carlington? 7403839944. And that's a big part of history also. I can remember I was working for WDIF, the original, and was called to go immediately to Carlington and to cover the tornado damage. And we were there shortly after, within an hour after it happened. And it was such a terrifying thing to see all the buildings damaged that were, you know, some were down. There were four fatalities, and it was something. But just like the case so often, I talked to a lady who lived across from the fire department, which had been flattened. The fire department was no longer in existence. Oh, here's a caller. Let me see here just a second. Okay, caller, go ahead.
The year the tornado hit was June of 1981.
Yes, yes. Okay.
That was the year before I was born.
Is that right?
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I can remember like it was yesterday.
Right.
Of course.
Wow.
Yeah. Would you like a ticket?
I like those zoo tickets if I could.
Sure, you betcha. And what is your name?
It's Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, Ring, R-I-N-G.
R-I-N-D, okay. Okay, very good. And you know where we're located?
Are you still, like, down in the basement?
No, we're not in the basement anymore.
Okay.
We're in, what's the date today? The 11th. Okay,
yeah.
Here's where we're at. We're in downtown Marion.
Okay.
The Ohio Health Building is at the corner of Prospect and Center.
Yeah.
Okay, we're up on the second floor.
Okay, that's where my job is at, too. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, fine, thanks.
All right, have a good day. Bye.
Okay, yeah, how about that? All right. So, how y'all doing today? Let me tell you about my weekend. First of all, Was it Monday? Yeah, we went to Mount Vernon, and one of my favorite places in Mount Vernon is called the Alcove. Now, the Alcove is a restaurant that is quite unique. It's not a fast food place. It's a fine dining and then some. Their china is beautiful. The glassware for water, even crystal glassware, and the atmosphere, you know, a lot of chandeliers. It's just a beautiful, high-class place, and it's something that I just love to, when I can afford to go to the Alcove in downtown Mount Vernon. Now, a lot of businessmen eat there every day, and a lot of others eat there every day. And they totally remodeled it here in the past couple of years. And, it's beautiful. But I had something I've never had before, and that is Oysters Rockefeller. Now, have you ever heard of that? You might have. Oysters Rockefeller is a very high-class meal, but it costs enough. The oysters are, they have a special... They're still in the half shell, and there's some spinach involved and different spices, and so delicious. Oh, boy, would I go for a bunch of them right now. And it was a great occasion, you know. Then I went to Kenyon College. My wife and I, we've been there before, and I used to bicycle there every week. And we spent some time sitting along the bike trail there, the Kokosin Gap Trail, and such beautiful weather. And we talked to a lot of people bicycling, a lot of older people, since, you know, during that regular day, a lot of people were at work, younger people. So the older people are out there bicycling. And it was a great time. Beautiful, just beautiful weather. But I couldn't get over the fact that Kenyon College is building and building, and the number of people and cars everywhere. We saw cars from probably every state of the Union. Hardly any from Ohio, it seemed like, but from New England states to California. Cars of all descriptions and all kinds. And just, I couldn't believe, as there were two huge of those building cranes at work, building new facilities, the college. I would suppose that their college population might be to the extent almost that it would become a university and not a college. Now, just north of Kenyon is the Nazarene University. And that's big time, too. I mean, their enrollment is great. And so great that it became a university, Nazarene University. In fact, the girl that I've talked to from the Marion County Park District is a graduate of the university there. But then we went to the bookstore, the Kenyon College bookstore, which is written up as one of the best college bookstores in the nation. And you can see why once you enter it. They've total remodeled it, and it's so beautiful. And every kind of book or publication that you could ever want is located in the college bookstore there. What a great day that was. It was just like renewing old times. Wow. Because I used to spend a lot of time over there. All right, the time right now is 10:59. We're going to be breaking here shortly, and we'll be back after the break. Let me see, who do I have? I may not have, We'll be open phones from 11:15 to 12 today, so keep that in mind. And keep in mind, of course, our big day at the airport, starting with the reception in Hangar 12 on Friday, and then the big program on Saturday. They'll have helicopter rides and other kind, Young Eagle flights, and all kinds of things going on. You want to, if you're interested in aviation.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LPFM, Marion, Ohio. For Emmy Award-winning actress and voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll, sharing her experience of being in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
One of the big traditions for a lot of people on Thanksgiving is the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Yes, absolutely, and I was in it one year. I played Mother Goose.
Did you?
Yes.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, there was nothing to tell. I was dressed up like Mother Goose, and I was in this thing. And I must say, I had a secret little flask, because it was colder than a bear's ears. And I had a little nip of some good warm stuff occasionally. So I was a very happy Mother Goose by the end of the trip. There, that's a secret let out.
Oh, my, that's a great story. So Mother
Isn't
Goose
that
was...
lovely?
Mother Goose
but
had
oh,
a few
what
nips.
Fun it was, and the joy of the